Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Our Greg Cosell conversation was a whole lot of fun. We'll have that for you in about 5 minutes if you missed it. How about Lucky in the City? Hi, Lucky. Thank you for calling.
Good afternoon, fellas. How you doing today?
We're good, man. Thank you for joining the show.
Well, I love this show, man. You know, 95.7, man. You know, I'm a gamer.
Let's go, Lucky.
Listen, man, I have a questionable concern, man, about Hey Arnold as our quarterback.
Very,
man.
Very nice.
We've seen Hey Arnold's, his play as far as with New England. And who else were we playing with, Carolina?
Jacksonville.
So I don't know, man. I mean, coming to us, I mean, hopefully maybe these next three games Kyle can scheme up, you know, something and keep him, have him compliment his skills, I guess, and just keep him above average at least, man, just to win at least two out of the three games, if not. That's all I'm asking.
Well, you're jumping ahead a little bit when you said
that
three games,
that many, yeah.
Or are you just talking about the first three games of the year, Lucky?
Well, I'm just saying just these first three games. Rock Party's going to be out 3 weeks, right?
No, we don't know that yet.
Don't know.
Lucky, thank you very much for listening, man. Yeah, the only thing, again, here's Kyle Shanahan on injuries and then more specifics on Brock.
All right, injuries for today. Yetur will not practice, knee. McCaffrey will not practice, calf/vet/vet day. Trent Williams won't practice, knee/vet day. Nick Bosa won't practice, vet day. Brock Purdy won't practice, left shoulder, toe. Juwan Jennings won't practice, shoulder. Jordan James, limited finger. Jordan Watkins, limited ankle. Ben Bartsch, limited knee and elbow.
Okay, and obviously then the first
knee and
question.
Elbow.
Are they attached? Then the next question went to Purdy.
Any further sense about whether Brock will be able to play on Sunday?
I think it's a long shot.
Is it possible that Purdy's injury could be a multi-week thing?
It's possible.
And that's the toe more so than the shoulder.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, it's possible. And, you know, just because Mac Jones has struggled in previous places doesn't mean he'll struggle here. Thinking about Geno Smith, who was really, really bad in New York. And then he went to a couple other teams and then he landed in Seattle. And after a couple of years as a backup, next thing you know, he's top 10 for offensive player of the year.
Well, I mean, look, the examples are all over the place. I love your Geno Smith example. What about Baker Mayfield? What about Sam Darnold?
Yeah.
These people have been around the league and had a lot of opportunities, and it didn't go well. And then all of a sudden, they found the right spot.
Daniel Jones, Danny Dimes.
Well,
1 week in, he's the flavor of the month.
Yeah, 1 week in.
People are loving what he did in week one.
They're liking it early.
They are liking it early. Well done.
He played the Dolphins. And I think that is a tragic team right now.
Yeah.
They're a hot mess everywhere. So we'll see. But no, give him the credit. It's an NFL game, and he played really well in it, and they scored on every drive. So you're not wrong about that. But I just, we see that all the time. So is this the right place? Is this the right time? I don't know. I can't refute any of the things that any of you are saying with your positivity and confidence. I'm just saying that for me, I'm not going to go there mentally until it actually happens. Because I think the backup quarterback is the worst phrase in sports.
Right.
It's why the NFL changed as many rules as they did.
But he's not the backup this week, so.
Well, but you know what I mean. You'll hear Greg Cosell here in just a second actually start the conversation by talking about how bummed he is.
Exactly.
Because Brock's not playing.
And we all love Brock, and, you know, Mac Jones may not be the savior, but the savior for the 49ers is in the building. They actually signed him today. And I can't believe you haven't mentioned this yet.
Go ahead. I know, he's the tight end.
Messiah Swinson.
That's right.
Messiah Swinson.
Who are you?
Can I get an amen?
Amen.
He might. I mean, the way tight ends are going down around here, he might actually be a guy.
So the practice squad now has Messiah and Sincere?
Is Sincere still on there?
He is.
Okay. That's pretty awesome.
I'm in love with our practice squad.
Stacking some names there.
Is it Chosen?
No, not anymore. Ah. Yeah.
That would be perfect, though.
That's incredible that we got rid of Chosen and went with Messiah instead.
I mean,
who's the chosen one now, Robbie?
Well, Chosen's great, but Messiah's like next level.
Exactly.
Like, the Messiah is chosen, and then you went out and did some Messiah things.
Possibly.
Speaking of the Messiah, Greg Cosell, NFL Films, was on the show. Our conversation earlier today we thought was really meaty, fantastic, and fun. So here it is, and he kind of almost started the conversation himself talking about the Brock Purdy injury.
You know, I'm really kind of disappointed about the Purdy situation. I really studied that tape in detail. I thought he played well last week, and apparently he's not going to go this week, huh?
That's what it's looking like, but why don't we start there? What did you see from Brock Purdy? Because as you might expect, some fans saw two interceptions, and, you know, they don't like that, Greg.
Well, that's okay. They shouldn't like that.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I made the mistake of watching Brock Purdy after I watched Caleb Williams. So
there you go.
You know, so I guess Purdy looked particularly good to me because at least he knows how to play quarterback right now. It's funny you talk the interceptions. The first interception was very interesting because it was a first down play. And I think people will be able to see this because I'll explain it, I hope, very clearly. And I think it was a run blitz by the linebacker Thomas, who didn't play many snaps. It was first down. I don't believe it was a pass blitz. It was a run blitz. And McCaffrey was forced to pick him up. And so what that meant is McCaffrey could not release as a check down or as an underneath route, which would have been right in the area of Jones and the linebacker, Ernest Jones. So what happened there is Jones was able to sink and get much more depth because he didn't have McCaffrey right in front of him as a potential receiver. And there was pressure on Purdy, so he kind of fell away from the throw, trying to hit Jennings on the dig route, part of the dagger concept, and therefore Jones was able to get really good depth and still had to leap up to get it. So, you know, it's the kind of throw where the fact that Purdy does not have a power arm comes into play because the pocket was squeezed and he sort of threw it falling away. But I understand why he threw it. It wasn't a bad read. It was just that the Seahawks beat the 49ers on that play because of the blitz. Which, as I said, I thought was a run blitz.
Yeah, and then tip of the cap to Seattle and the linebacker for dropping deep and making that throw almost impossible to complete. It's the other interception, Greg, that kind of stuck with me because, and he's got at least two or three defenders there. What did you see on the tape about that choice from Purdy to make that interception?
Yeah, that was man coverage all the way, and Josh Jobe played it really well. He undercut Pearsall because he knew he had help over the top. There was really no window for Purdy to get the ball to Pearsall. Witherspoon kind of sunk from underneath, and Woolen from over the top kind of squeezed the space as well. That was a poor decision. That ball should not have been thrown to Pearsall. So that one was just a poor decision. And an important part of the game, too, because that was in the fourth quarter. So that one, yeah, that one he should not have thrown. You know, I know why he threw it, because the play really it was a vertical element on the left side, kind of a post route, and then Pearsall was running kind of the crosser or over, and it's a very common two route concept, and he pretty much thought, hey, you know, I'm going to throw it to Pearsall because that's normally where you throw it in that concept, and he just. I don't know whether he didn't see it correctly or he truly thought he could get it in. Only Brock could tell you that. But it turned out to not be a good decision based on how the coverage played out.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, with us as he is every Wednesday on Willard and Dibbs. All right, Greg, take us through, and it wasn't the last play, but the touchdown pass that ended up being the game winner. Like, what went through your mind when you saw him release the ball the first time you saw it?
You're talking about I saw it live, obviously.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, when I saw him release the ball, obviously, you know, I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is probably not going to be a good thing because the play started to have the feel of you know, a bad play. I mean, you know how that goes. It just starts to have the feel of a really bad play. And, you know, I that's what I kind of felt. And then the guy just went, yeah, look, it's a lucky play, but it worked. I mean, he looked left initially. You know, obviously, he was looking left to the two received to McCaffrey and Valdez-Scantling, I guess it was, on that play, 83, if I remember correctly. So he was looking to the two-man concept. Could he have thrown it to Valdez-Scantling? He may have been able to. Sometimes when you have a new receiver and you just don't feel like you're – like, for instance, if that was Jennings who had run that route, maybe he throws it to him because he feels good about Jennings. But he comes off of it, and then the pressure – actually, there was pressure there. Williams did get pushed back into the pocket, and then he had to leave the pocket to his right. And then it becomes a fire drill, and you're just looking – you're looking for someone. And this was third down. The score – was 13-10,
right? 13-10, yep.
Yeah, I mean, could he have thrown it away and they kick a field goal and make it 13-13? I guess fans would say, well, that's not pretty much a given.
Right.
Yeah, so, again, you never know what goes through a quarterback's mind in that situation. Purdy's probably not thinking as he's running for his life to the right that, gee, what can Moody do right here? I'm sure that didn't really cross his mind as he's running to his right. But he threw it up. And when he threw it up, just watching on TV, I'm kind of thinking, I'm not really sure about that. And then it just happened to be one of those plays. Tongas went up and got it. I mean, beyond that, what are you going to say? I mean, it was, it's just kind of a lucky play, a fluky play to some degree.
Yeah, I didn't see the luck in it. I saw a 49er make a play, whereas a Seahawk didn't. But I don't want to quibble with your use of the four-letter word.
Right, I guess luck's not the right word, but fluky, like you wouldn't have expected
right. Certainly not how they drew it up. I want to ask you about the 22 personnel that Kyle used. You lose Kittle, and in that second drive in the second half, they started using a lot of big packages, two tight ends, two running backs. What did you see from the 49er offense and the way they had to shift after Kittle got hurt?
Well, personally, I think one reason they started doing that is because it became evident pretty much from the start of the game that the Seahawks were going to play in their nickel versus big personnel. See, that's a very odd thing. The Seahawks ended up playing nickel. The Seahawks played 58 nickel snaps, okay? And they played, I believe, 32 of those 58 snaps against 12 and 21 personnel. So I think that they probably thought that they would have an advantage running the ball. Now, they didn't run really well. I didn't think that was a function of McCaffrey. I thought he looked fine. I thought the Seahawks did a really good job of controlling gaps. I thought it was much more a function of that. But I think once they saw how the Seahawks were going to play from a personnel standpoint, playing nickel to 12 and 21, they figured they'd stay with it. And by the way, we know that 21 personnel is a major foundation of Kyle's offense basically since they've had Juszczyk. So that's not something that's abnormal for the 49ers.
Greg, let's get to Mac Jones, who we are likely to see Sunday in New Orleans. And I guess start with sort of more of an umbrella question about his play over the last 4 years. What have you seen as his strengths and weaknesses?
Well, I think in many ways he's stylistically similar to Purdy, other than the fact that he's not as good an athlete as Purdy. But I think when you put him in the context of this offense, and that's all we can do because that's what he's going to be doing, is he is a timing rhythm player. He can execute the kinds of throws that are asked to be made in this offense. Now, he obviously played last year and had some ups and some downs, which was to be expected. He was in a pretty dysfunctional situation. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's going to come out and be unbelievable and, wow, it's special. But the way in which he plays, and I think everybody was probably well aware when he came out in the draft that it seemed that Kyle liked him because it's that style of quarterback. He's a timing rhythm player who gets the ball out, and that fits what Kyle wants. I mean, Kyle, it's funny. I said in the matchup room here, we got, three or four guys that, we all work on the show. And, every week when I watch the 49ers, I call guys in and say, boy, that's a really cool concept. That's a really well-designed play. And that's what Kyle does really well. He's really good at designing plays and creating reads for the quarterback. I mean, just think of the Juszczyk 25-yard reception, okay? I'm sure you guys remember that. That is just a beautifully schemed and designed play. That's what Kyle's good at. And ideally, your quarterback is able to get the ball to his primary read based on the design of the pass game. And if that can be the case more often than not, of course, it's never the case 100% of the time, but if that can be the case more often than not, then Mac Jones can function in that style of offense because that's who he is. He's not something else. That's who he is.
Yeah, that play was, Juszczyk kind of chips and delays, and all of a sudden he had the entire half of the field. And I just highlight you pointing it out because Juszczyk may have to play more of a Kittle role. Is he suited to slide up when they do have 21 personnel, two running backs? He did a lot of it against Seattle, but he wasn't as much of a pass catcher. Can he, based on what you've seen, kind of assimilate the Kittle role a little bit?
I think he can, and he's done that in the past. There's always been plays to Juszczyk in the pass game that have been designed for him. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say, boy, he's going to be a foundation in the pass game, but there's no question that you can design plays for him. He's a very good receiver. He's not just a check down guy. I mean, obviously, you're not going to line him up wide and say run by somebody, but there's no question you can create opportunities for him. I mean, I remember plays over the years where he'd be an offset back in a two-back set with the quarterback under center, and it would look like an ISO lead run, and he'd run right at the linebacker, but it wouldn't be a run, and then he would just keep releasing, and they throw the ball to him. So, I mean, there's ways to get him involved as a pass receiver more than they normally use him. No one's Kittle, obviously. Kittle's, arguably the most complete tight end in the league. You certainly can do that, and they'll figure that out. I mean, even Jennings, look, Jennings, it was his first game. He hadn't practiced a lot. He'll probably be more of a factor. We saw Pearsall. Pearsall's a good player. So we'll see how the pass game works. They'll definitely want to run the ball better than they did in terms of production.
Greg, interesting that you would say stylistically, Mac and Brock similar, but Brock obviously the better athlete. So here's what I'm curious about. Go back to last week, and you saw what you saw from the 49ers offensive line, which did, again, it did force Brock to use his legs a lot. Now Mac, who won't use his legs as much, is behind that offensive line. So I wonder if you see that as potentially problematic.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm always leery of making those kinds of judgments after one game, because how many snaps did they play together in the preseason? Together, five guys, probably none.
So, Trent Williams didn't play,
Right. So, again, I'm not going to sit here and say they'll be great. They could have some issues again. All I'm saying is I'm never comfortable after week one making a definitive judgment about a player, a team, a unit. You would expect them to be better. Don't forget they've got a new left guard. You would expect them to be better. It's a pretty good Saints defense in terms of personnel, so that could cause them some issues. But, I would definitely expect them, I didn't think this was Trent Williams' best game either.
No,
I mean,
he
didn't play all preseason. The guys, we all know he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, but you still have to shake the rust off. I mean, this is the first time he played, and then you're not asking him to play 15 snaps to just get a feel. You're asking him to play, I mean, they ran, 72, 73 plays. They ran a lot of plays.
They did, and Brock had a lot of dropbacks, and I guess so that's sort of the way I'm asking it, not so much to predict how the Niners' offensive line will play, but do you see it as likely that Kyle might kind of have a game plan of getting the ball out of Mac Jones' hands a little quicker, things like that?
Well, I think he normally likes to do that. I mean, will he take some shots with deeper drops? For sure, and I think down and distance impacts that clearly. And like I said, they did run with some volume in this game, but not with great production. So I think they would love for the run game to be as voluminous and even more so with much better production. Not that he's looking to hide Mac Jones. I don't believe Kyle plays offense to hide quarterbacks. I think he plays his offense and he expects it to be executed. So he's not going to try to hide Mac Jones, but I think they would love to get more production out of the run game.
And how does that match up with the Saints and what they like to do defensively? Just looking at some of their game, looked like they had a lot of plays where they had five down linemen. How does the Niners' big package of multiple tight ends and multiple backs match up with New Orleans and what they try to do defensively?
Well, their base front is really a 5-2, so you're probably going to see a lot of that. They've got some really good players up front. I mean, Brian Breesy is a really good player. David Godshaw is a tough guy up front. They've got some big guys up front. They can also rush the quarterback a little bit. Grandison has turned it into a nice pass rusher. He got paid. Chase Young at times can be very, very good. And they've got, you know, DeMario Davis. I mean, I feel like he's 100 years old and has played for 20 years, but he is still a good football player. Pete Werner's a solid player with a lot of size. I mean, this is a good front group. You know, you could almost make the argument that you'd like to attack them on the back end, but we'll see. You know, you know, teams always – it's always a combination with offenses and coaches of what they want – their staples and what they want to establish and they know they do well. What, you know, what is their identity versus what are we playing against, and does that cause us to make some adjustments, or do we just do what we do, and if we do it well, we're going to have success? There's always that balance. You never know exactly what it is, what it's going to be based on a given opponent.
Greg, this is what I also want to ask you about Mac Jones. Like, let's go through the first 4 years of his career. We know that there were, you know, just kind of interesting situations with regard to who was the offensive coordinator with the Patriots. You know, you made the comment that last year in Jacksonville, things, again, that's a coaching staff that got replaced. Do you believe, has Mac Jones really had a chance yet to play in a spot where the surroundings were kind of working well and they were healthy for him?
And, you know, I've been giving this a lot of thought. I mean, this is the kind of stuff I think about, you know, because obviously everybody wants to talk quarterbacks. And so I start to think, you know, if what is the relationship between a coach and the quarterback? You know, how many quarterbacks can go out there and in a sense just play regardless of coach, regardless of scheme, and just play? There's very few of those guys, even when you look back in like the history of the game. I mean, you know, so it's always a combination of a coach, the approach that he takes with a quarterback, understanding his strengths, understanding his limitations, the people around him, the team around him, that all goes together. And Mac Jones is as much of a poster child for that as any quarterback, although most quarterbacks are. You know, look, you know, everybody talked about J.J. McCarthy on Monday night. Well, what happened was is those two touchdowns he threw in the second half were schemed plays. The primary receiver was open, and he delivered the ball to the primary receiver based on the schemed play call. So does that make J.J. McCarthy, oh, my God, he was so special, or he executed a play call where the primary receiver was open? I mean, theoretically, any quarterback can do that. So you're hoping with Mac Jones that Kyle can dial it up, have a good feel for the defense, that the Saints defense, and that he can be an efficient player. But he needs team around him.
Yeah, and J.J. McCarthy's counterpart had a couple of plays schemed open, and he didn't find his guy. And
including,
yeah, the big one.
That's a long.
Yep.
That's a long conversation about Caleb Williams and the way I look at quarterbacks. And, you know, I don't know if I've told you guys this, I probably have, but I mean, the guy who taught me the quarterback position, and I was the most grateful thing in my career, was Bill Walsh. So, you know, when I watch quarterbacks, I think about Bill Walsh.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way I think about quarterbacks. So I don't think in terms, oh, he's just going to go out and make plays today. You know, that's not the way, that should not be the way the quarterback position is taught, by the way.
Yeah, a good little coach, teacher, that Bill Walsh guy. What did you see on the film from Christian McCaffrey as far as, you know, hitting the hole and hitting it with force in his 31 touches?
Yeah. I thought McCaffrey looked fine. I thought that the Seahawks did a really good job of controlling and filling gaps, so therefore there was just not a lot of space. But I thought he ran hard. I mean, just look, this was a pass play, but look at that first play of the second half where he caught the little screen pad. Well, it was, I think it was actually a check down type play, and then he ran for 25 yards. I mean, he looked perfectly fine. Wouldn't you guys agree? He looked perfectly fine on that play. So I didn't think there was anything wrong with him. I didn't think there was a lot of space, but I thought he ran hard. You know, the only issue with McCaffrey is the nature of his injuries are such that, you know, and maybe it's just me, maybe you guys feel the same way, but every time he carries, I just like hope he doesn't get injured.
Right.
You know?
No, yeah.
Just, you know, it's just one of those things now where I just hope that doesn't happen.
Before we leave the offensive side of the ball, Greg, Ricky Pearsall, we've talked a lot about him. We know that you like him. That got a lot of people excited. What are some of the specifics of what you saw in this effort?
Oh, well, First of all, I think, you know, the first ball he caught was just a really well-designed play that beat the defense. He ran a little bender, a little dig route, and that was classic Purdy throwing with great timing, anticipation, and precise ball location. I think the play that really probably stood out to me, if you're really talking about Pearsall, was the one that was 24 yards early in the fourth quarter, where he was he beat Woolen in press coverage and ran a great route to win on his outcut. Number one, he got off the press with no problem at all, no disruption in his route, so it didn't disrupt the timing of Purdy. And then you probably saw at the end, you know, as he got to the top of his stem, the way he bent inside and did a great job of sticking inside, and kind of Woolen got stuck. And then, you know, and then that, and that gave Purdy the indicator of when to let the ball go. And that, to me, was his best route. And then, of course, the last one, you know, that was off coverage, and it was cover three, and he just kind of ran by him, you know, and Woolen kind of misjudged the whole situation. But Pearsall's a good player. You know, again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's going to catch 100 balls, but he's a good player.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films. All right, what's your big pick for the Niners-Saints game, Greg?
I'm kidding.
Yeah. I'm just kidding, Greg. You're fine.
All right, by the way, yeah, just on the defensive side,
yeah,
I got to tell you,
D-winners. I've had it for years. You going to say it?
I've got a major bromance with Fred Warner. That guy is just ridiculously good. And I thought D. Winters played really, really well. I loved what they did in their nickel front, where they had where they moved Williams inside. They had DeGross Matos inside. I really, you know, I love that whole approach. I think that'll only get better as the year goes on. You know, I think there's some good things here, you know. I got to tell you, I didn't know this was going to happen because, you know, I'm not in their meetings, obviously. But I really liked Siegel coming out of Kansas State. Yeah. And when I saw that he was the starter, I was like, wow, that really pleased me because I really liked his tape. And I thought he was a better player than where he got drafted. And obviously he's now a starting player, but I really like what they did up front. That's going to get better and better. You know, Huff looks solid. So it's Bosa and Huff on the edge with Gross Matos and Williams inside. But Winters, I mean, we know Warner, he's been doing it for years. He's the best linebacker in the game. And I don't think there's a close second. But I thought Winters really showed up as well. He's a solid football player.
Good start for the Niner defense and Robert Saleh with his second tenure, no doubt about it.
They were flying around, too. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they were flying around. It wasn't just individual plays. They were flying around.
Greg, awesome to have you. Yeah. We're already looking forward to next week.
Me too, guys. I'm just glad it's the regular season, and the tape I watch, I actually feel like, you know, this really matters now.
This matters. Yeah, yeah. I'm told this counts. So, Greg, thank you as always.
All right, guys, really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
No, we appreciate it. There it is, Greg Cosell.
Oh, yeah.
And again, I think my favorite part of it is, hey, has Mac Jones ever kind of had what he's needed? No. No, he has not.
No, he has not.
And listen, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he for sure will this weekend, but I think it's certainly his best shot at it.
And he won't have George Kittle, we know that, yep. And Juwan Jennings won't be listed as anything until Friday. And Shanahan even said today, I'm not putting words to it. You're gonna have to just wait on that one. But we don't know who they're going to have. The Messiah at tight end could be elevated. It could be Farrell and Tonjes. It could be Robinson, McCaffrey, and Juszczyk, and Pearsall, and who knows who else? Maybe Watkins gets to make his debut. It's still so far from Sunday that we really don't know who Mac's going to have.
Well, for the gamesmanship crowd, I think we take something from that. So, again, if he's going to tell you, guys, I'm not going to, you know, it's kind of like Christian. Questionable concern. What about Juwan? No clue. Hey, which foot is the injury on for Brock Purdy? I don't have to tell you. All right, is he going to play this week? Long shot.
Right.
See that?
That was my favorite. I don't have to tell you. I do with the shoulder, but not with the toe. Yep. Because he's a quarterback and you got to tell which shoulder, throwing or non-throwing. But you don't have to say, is it his favorite toe or his second favorite big toe?
The next level follow-up question would have been, what if Eddie Pinheiro gets hurt and you need Brock to kick? Which foot now?
Well, it's either his plant foot and stuff or it's, you know, the kicking
foot. I'm not
going
to say anything about Christian, you know. Guess.
No, yeah. but he did. He did. He did say.
Any further sense about whether Brock will be able to play on Sunday?
I think it's a long shot.
Is it possible that Purdy's injury could be a multi-week thing?
That's possible.
And that's the toe, more so than the shoulder.
Yes.
Just my feeling in this moment, I feel like this is being undersold. I get it. I understand that there's a feeling out there that with Shanahan calling plays and Christian McCaffrey behind him and others around, I get the feeling. And again, the Saints are the opponent. I understand the idea that most of you think the 49ers are still going to win this football game. But that kind of dismissiveness to the situation, to me, is not fitting right now. And the fact that he admits it could be a multi-week injury. If this is a grade 2 turf toe situation, most would say that's a 2 to 3 week injury, which means this guy might be missing the home opener. And in a year where we feel like every single win is vital because there are transitions going on the roster, I just, I'm a little surprised that more 49er fans don't feel a little bit concerned about this. And obviously we haven't talked to them all, but I'm basing this on the interaction that we're having with each other and with listeners so far today.
Yeah, the concern is lessened for me by the fact that Mac Jones has started, this will be his 50th start in the NFL, and if he has better stuff around him and stuff, and he's got Shanahan calling plays, even without Kittle, I think that he is in a position to play better than he certainly did his last few times out in Jacksonville, where you had less, you had a coach en route to being fired, you were 4-12, and you didn't have much to help you, a bad O-line, and not a lot of skill guys around you. So that makes me feel good. One thing that has me a little bit more, not troubled, but thinking about what Greg just said, Greg Cosell and the Saints with a five-man front, they like to do a 52 in their base with five down linemen, whatever, and you've got no Kittle in the run game, so if the offensive line struggles a little bit to establish the run game, well, now Mac Jones is going to have to do more with his arm. And the final piece to my concern, do you know who the Saints defensive coordinator is?
No.
It's Brandon Staley.
Oh.
Fresh off a 10-year with the Niners, so not that he's going to know all the secrets, but certainly he's going to have more inside knowledge on what the Niners like to do.
I mean,
he actually saw it every week.
I know, but he's not very good. So, like,
Brandon Staley?
Yeah.
He's a great coordinator.
He's a good coordinator.
Yeah. And he wasn't the coordinator here.
No, he was the something.
I think he's the assistant head coach.
I think he was the. Did they label him co-defensive coordinator, or did they just call him this? He was the assistant defensive coordinator,
right,
or whatever. I don't know what he was doing here. But yeah.
Well, he's coordinating there. And I have a feeling that he might have gotten the job here if Robert Saleh wasn't going to be ready and available.
You think?
I don't know. It seemed like I don't think that his prints weren't totally on last year's defensive woes.
I mean, James is right. He was officially the assistant head coach last
interesting
year.
Yeah. I don't think anybody who had anything to
stay hot, Dibber.
Yeah. I don't think anybody who had anything to do with defense, yeah, I don't think they wanted him anywhere near this team. I still am flummoxed by how little people seem to fully grasp how awful the 49ers defense was last year.
It was bad.
Awful.
Well, I mean, I think you're being overdramatic.
I'm not.
It was not.
I that's how
awful.
I feel.
Yeah.
I think it was they were brutal.
Yeah, they struggled, and you had one linebacker playing on a fractured ankle and another linebacker who literally quit on your team.
Yeah.
So the key to your defense is flying around and stuffing the run, and you didn't do that. And your front four was mostly ineffective. Your star corner missed a handful of games because of personal tragedy, and your coordinator was a newbie
who is
no longer coordinating.
I didn't say there weren't some reasons out there that we know, but it was awful. It was awful, and it to me, it was sort of a rudderless ship from the beginning. I don't understand what Kyle Shanahan was doing when he promoted Nick Sorensen to that job.
Well,
Nick Sorensen never looked like he understood what was going on with that particular job. Never looked ready for that job.
And if I'm remembering last offseason, it felt like other guys who he would have wanted got other jobs and got better jobs. And so I think you were getting to a spot where you were running out of options.
Well, I didn't understand. Why not Brandon Staley? If he's a good coordinator, why not Brandon Staley? I didn't understand that at all. And then you make him the assistant head coach when everybody knows he has nothing to do with head coaching anything. In fact, he was a head coach in this league one time, and it was a joke. I mean, it was an absolute joke what he was doing with the Chargers.
He's going for it on every possible fourth down.
I mean, Cheryl Bosa told us. Without telling us, she told us. She told on him.
Oh, no, yeah. Not Harbaugh.
Yeah, actually, Harbaugh. She said Joey loved
him. Oh, no, babe.
Yes, babe.
That would be too fatty.
I mean,
he used to, you know, allow himself a slice of toast.
Seriously? I just realized I never made the breakfast.
There's still time. Although,
it
was supposed to be preseason.
Well, in the way Nick played, maybe we don't need you to make the breakfast because he was pretty damn good in the opener, I thought. Not Harbaugh.
I'm so uncomfortable with how good Dibs' impression of Cheryl Bosa is.
That would be too fatty.
You don't even realize it's your best impression.
No, come on. We've lost Willard. He's down.
I can't even see him.
It absolutely kills all your other impressions.
I appreciate it. I aim to please.
Oh my God. No, do I need to make it for Mac?
I mean,
or should we just let it ride? They won.
Let it ride.
They won the game.
Yeah. You know, their current associate assistant head coach is another guy who used to be a head coach.
Wait, say that again?
They have a new assistant head coach.
Bradley.
Correct.
Yeah, Gus Bradley.
14-48 in Jacksonville.
Oh.
14-48.
Come on.
They gave that man four seasons. So, no.
Oh, yikes.
Come on. Including, he authored a 2-12 in his final season.
Is Cheryl going to be in New Orleans this week?
That would be too fatty.
No, it feels like something she would do.
Yeah, I mean, beignets, she's not wrong.
She went to that Buffalo game. Did you see Joey Bosa was verklempt after that game?
Emotional.
Oh, yeah. He was like, I've never been on a team that does stuff like this before. Like, I mean, it was, yeah, he was overwhelmed with emotion. Where are the Bills this week? What are they doing? What are they doing for an encore?
Jets.
Nah, yeah, Cheryl's going to be in New Orleans. For sure she's going to be in New Orleans. That sounds like fun. All right. Tonight at 7 p.m., Odyssey presents I'm Listening, special broadcast event featuring some of the biggest names in music, news, and sports, and some of the most respected mental health professionals. I'm Listening will be hosted by Carson Daly and spreads awareness about mental health and the message that talk saves lives. You're not alone. It's okay to not be okay. You can listen right here on 95.7 The Game at 7 p.m. tonight. For more information, visit imlistening.org. And we're sponsored by Life Source Water Systems. This is Willard and Dibs.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
I love this show, man. You know, 95.7, man. You know, I'm a gamer.
On 95.7, The Game.
The Phillies have blown it open. And I'm just going to go ahead and say it.
Oh, whoa.
I'm just going to say it.
Don't do it.
No, I will.
No, because you got mad at me yesterday when I said something that I shouldn't have said.
What did you say? I don't even remember that.
And he's got a no-hitter.
That's different.
I almost said a bad word there.
That's different. That's a very likely jinxable situation.
What you're about to say
is a very unlikely jinxable situation.
It's more unlikely. More unlikely that a guy throws a no-hitter than it is a team blows a 7-run lead.
That's not my point, but you are jinxing the no-hitter, which is very likely to go away. The 8-1 lead that the Phillies have is very unlikely to go away.
You were about to say the Giants are two back.
The Giants are two back.
2.5 as we sit.
Lock it in. Well, they're going to be 2.5 because they're not actually two back. The whole semantics argument that has
we're
already gotten.
We're not doing that.
We're not doing it.
You can call the boss and you guys can slug it out again.
I'll just change the way I say it. The Phillies are going to win tonight.
Okay.
The Phillies are going to win tonight. They're up 8-1 in the bottom. The Phillies are going to win this game. They're
Kukush.
Up 8-1 in the bottom of the sixth inning, still batting with still ducks on pond. And I love it. I love it. The Mets are a mess, and they're about to get broomed.
Mm.
And now you take a breath tomorrow.
Shout out Janai.
What do the Mets got this weekend? What are they doing?
Oh, I had it written down. I already put it away.
No,
darn
sorry.
It.
I'll look it up.
No, they've got
They got Boach.
They got a menagerie of teams in it and teams not in it.
We'll take care of them.
Rangers are still in it in the AL wild cards.
Yeah, but it is back home. They've got a 9-game homie with the Rangers, Padres, and Washington Nationals.
Yep.
For the Mets. All right. Well, I mean, here we go. Here we go.
When the Mets play anybody, you can go ahead and throw the records out. Because it, good teams, bad teams, they're losing to them in equal doses.
Yep. Oh, and the Giants have the Dodgers. And so, okay. Let's see it.
Yeah. It's going to be a home game for L.A. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Why do you do that?
I'm trying to prepare you. Earlier in our impromptu show meeting,
I'm well prepared.
I wanted you to be prepared because you were talking about being at the Yard last night.
Yeah, it was fun.
And it was maybe half empty or half full.
It was more than half. It was whatever, yeah.
Sure. Friday will not be those conditions. All of the empty green seats will be filled with people wearing blue.
Yeah, that's whatever.
It's a home game.
It's not a home game.
Well, the Niners in L.A. at SoFi,
that's
a home game.
That's not a comp. It's not a comp.
Unfortunately, it's become a comp.
It's not a comp. It's not like that. The giant the Oracle
Does
Park.
Does Vivid Seats do their thing for baseball games or just
know.
For football?
I don't know. I don't know if they do.
And for people who don't know, they estimate what the road fan percentage will be. Yeah. And they said in Seattle, the Niner fans would be 53.
Yeah.
Felt more like about 40. But still, they had a presence.
Hard to tell on TV.
And the Dodgers will have a presence on Friday.
For sure, but they will not have a SoFi Stadium Niners-type presence. Nobody does. There's no other road presence in all of sports, in my opinion, than the Niners at SoFi Stadium. I don't know that exists. Maybe there's something on the East Coast when the Yankees play Tampa or something like that. I don't know. The Lakers back in the day on the road. I don't know. I've never seen anything in sports like when the Niners visit SoFi Stadium. She was right. It's crazy. She was right.
Yeah. When it's not that crazy. Had she lived there for long enough, she would understand that L.A. people aren't normally super big fans of the Rams.
Well, yeah, they were gone. Stream your local NFL game all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year. That's like $250 a month. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Hey, real quick before we hop out of here, speaking of things that cost a certain amount of money per month to watch, this is going to be an unpopular take, but I just think it's not that I'm coming down anyone's road here. I just think we need to cope with this better. Adam Silver's getting ripped today. Did you see this? The NBA commissioner's getting ripped because he was speaking today, and they asked him, Grandy got mad about something. I'm not mad about that. I guess what? They're like taking away the stat for when you heave a ball from half court or something like that. It's now a team shot. It's not an individual shot.
Yeah, I think if it's from 35 feet or further.
So what? Like, you know, NFL or NBA players are egomaniacs. That's basically what it is. Because I'm sure this came from the players' union where they're like, stop messing with our stats. Fine, whatever. There was another quote where Adam Silver was asked about the rising costs of watching the games because of all of the streaming services that are now being looped in to watching sports. And his answer came off as super dismissive because he was kind of like, look, yeah, there's not a whole lot we can do about that. Plus, the NBA is a highlight league. Therefore, you can go find the highlights and you can watch them on your own. And people are very upset with this answer. And I kind of was like, can I have his back for a second? Like, what the hell on earth doesn't have rising costs? What isn't impossible? Do you all have a kid that you want to send to college? How the hell are you going to do that? How?
I may not be around for that one.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Who the hell's got the money for that? So, like, I get it, and I'm largely with you. There are definitely games I don't go to anymore because of XYZ. There are trips I don't go on. You know what I mean? Like, yes, I'm old enough to win, like, your favorite band had a concert. You could probably get in for under $50. I looked at tickets to go down to L.A. and go to Oasis last weekend. It was going to cost me almost $1,000 to get into that building, and I didn't even know where the hell I would be sitting. So it's like, I don't know, man. Are we going to rip Adam Silver because, like, it's to watch anything now you have to buy it? That's the way it is.
I mean, I only rip him because of what the league has become. And he's right. It's a highlights league. And if I didn't have this job to where it's my job to watch all 82 Warrior games and take notes and be fully aware of everything that's going on, I probably wouldn't watch all 82 because it's a highlights league. And when they're taking on Charlotte, and they're taking on fill-in-the-blank team that, you know, you're not super invested in, you may not watch it at all. And that's, unfortunately, the reality of the league. And if the players aren't going to play all 82, why, as a fan, would you be holding to watch all 82?
That's fine. And you're not. You're not. I mean, basically, the idea, because isn't it, this is why the Warriors have three games that are starting after 8 o'clock this year?
Yeah.
Are they on Peacock or something like that?
I thought they were on Tuyub. I could be wrong.
I think they're Peacock.
Pretty sure it's Peacock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fade the Dibbers. Anyway, I just...
Take your losses when you can find them with me.
You're finally wrong. Anyway, that's just... That's what we're doing now. That's what we're doing. The Giants have games on Apple TV Plus.
Yeah.
Like, I hate it, but okay. Shout out to... Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text lines.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
650. Want to know what's free?
95.7
Sports Radio.
You got it.
Sports Radio is free.
That's right.
Well, you got to buy the radio, but
wow, you do. But you know, you got Tim and Tom. Tim
free.
And Tom for every home game, and you got double all the Tim you want on the road. And yeah, it's fantastic. Hey! And he does such a good job that listening to the NBA with Tim Roy is pleasurable. You don't have to go searching for a lot of the information.
Pretty joyous, yeah.
We go around the association.
Great.
I lost you.
No, we're right here. What do you got? What are you doing? What are you about to do?
We're going to hear the crossover coming up next.
Yeah.
You two, along with Steiny and Evan, talked about Brock Purdy likely being out week two in New Orleans. Mac Jones time, baby.
Let's go.
Don't do that. I'm bummed. Are y'all like actually excited about this?
Dude, more excited about this than Brandon Allen.
Exactly.
Well, that's fine. No, that's not more excited about it. That's more tolerant of it. Like,
Well, it's more excited still works. Not like I'm bursting at the seams to watch Mac Jones, I did not want to watch Brandon Allen.
I'm going to Greg Cosell's house this weekend. I'll have a little.
Yeah. You'd be wrong.
That was a little too kawaii for my Greg taste.
I've got a major bromance with Fred Warner.
That's one of your better impressions too. All right, Grady's coming up, and it's brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you. Here for good. You want to do it again tomorrow?
I got a lock to give out tomorrow.
Oh, that's right.
Your boy's hot, ride the Diver.
Yeah.
5-0. Call my message phone.
You're trying to go 6-0?
And the pick is in.
I don't even know what the number is.
Can't even remember who's playing.
The Packers and Commanders.
Oh, the pick is definitely in. Tomorrow's an easy one. It's a 5-star lock.
I love it. The pick is in. Who do you like? I don't even know who's playing.
I gave it out during the crossover, so stay tuned.
All right. For Dibs, for Grady, for Lucas.
Whatever.
I'm Mark. Shoot your shot. It's all you got.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.